Hello, everyone, and welcome to RHAP's coverage of Survivor South Africa, Island of Secrets. I'm your host, Shannon Gates, here to talk about episode 6. There were so many strategic decisions. I have a lot of questions. I have a lot to get into with my co-host, the Tanya to my Sipe, or so he was. I think these avatars actually might be cursed and we should stop this, but nonetheless, please welcome Mike Bloom. Mike, should we stop the avatars?
No, we have 14 people left in the cast. Let's keep going through them until we've expended them all. I'm confused though, Shannon. I don't know why we're talking about Survivor. I came on to play Ken and Barbie, so I might need to just shuffle my notes around a bit.
Yeah, I mean, so Nicole definitely is Barbie. I feel like a lot of these guys could be Ken, so maybe that's how they were casting it. And do you feel like that's a future season, like Survivor Ken versus Barbie?
Well, also, isn't Nicole married? So I guess maybe, you know, Kubis is really speaking towards the lack of genitals that the Ken doll has, and that it's a very platonic but, you know, close friendship.
Oh, I should hope so. I mean, I feel like they're definitely a friendship. I feel like that's what he was saying. But Saula,
they're literally called amigos, which means friends. So
they couldn't have made it clearer that nothing was going on here when the first episode, when they made that the name of the alliance. And it's such a strong alliance, and like it keeps on going. So like, friendship is key.
Yeah, I think so. You know, lying together, creating fun stories, sometimes to your point, clipping your friend during a tribal council. This is all about friendships forged and friendships broken in this episode. I can't believe we're a third of the way through the season, but I gotta say, you know, I was a little trepidatious in the first couple of episodes, but I have fallen fully in love with this season. There, you know, I could point out some quibbles with a couple people that are under edited at this point or aren't exactly, you know, ticking off on the screen. But for the most part, there is so much interesting stuff going on. Most of it questionable in the strategic sense, but there's so much great stuff to get into each and every week. And Survivor South Africa is truly firing on all cylinders right now.
Yeah, I mean, I look at the cast and like even people a couple of weeks ago who I'm like, maybe not as great from a casting perspective, then they have like their coming out episode, like Meryl and like Dante this episode. So I feel like, you know, in classic Survivor South Africa form, the casting is so good. And I feel like almost everyone can bring something, even if it's ironically like Durrell. So, you know, even the people we haven't seen a lot of, it's week 6 of 18. So we have a while and I'm sure they'll have their moment for sure. But I love getting to talk about this with you, and I've loved every single one of our guests. But I really like just getting to talk about it, the two of us. And like an episode like this, when there were so many decisions, some of them good, some of them bad, and to just like drill down on every single one of them, because for me, the theme of this episode was like dumb defensible moves. For the most part, it was like moves that seem really stupid on the surface, but kind of have merit. And then there were a couple that I thought were just solidly good. And then there was one particular one I thought was just flat out bad. So there were so many decisions to talk about, and I'm really keen to get into it.
Yeah, what I really like about the way this season is also portraying these decisions is like almost the opposite to your point of, I can understand the internal logic behind the decisions that they make, but almost from an external objective point of view, they're bad decisions. But I guess the question is, you know, things that we perceive as bad could actually be good in-game decisions depending on the way people are perceiving things. And that's what makes this discussion so much fun. Also, the fact that I know I've been decrying this every week when we get to the Chizzy, but there's so much fun in that every player every week pretty much does like some good stuff and some bad stuff. The Survivor South Africa edit, I'm not sure what it is entirely, but it really does seem like we are painting with such a thin brush, where we're getting all different shades of each and every person as a player, with a couple of exceptions. You know, I'd love to see more of Maba. I would love to see more of Mike outside of his hate boner for Rocco.
Yeah.
Considering we got another confessional of that this week. But other than that, I feel like we have a really good sense as to where everyone else's head is at in the game. And depending on what we're approaching next week, it's going to be a great job of shaking things up further.
Yeah, there's a lot of complexity to the decisions. There's a lot of information given into the relationships. Like, that's what I feel so good about. Like, I truly do know a lot about them. It's been a little bit hard for the 5 people, I think, that haven't been to tribal council. So, you know, you're bound to see less of them. You're bound to see less of them strategically as well, considering all but one of them haven't even been to Island of Secrets. So it's like, we can't get a lot from them in that sense. But as I said, you know, you're always like, oh my God, I can't believe we're 6 weeks through. It's like, yeah, we still have 3 months to go. Like, you know, there will be time. And when we get to like the Chizzy, for example, I always feel bad because I'm like, some people like a Mike is probably playing a really good game, but we're not seeing any of it. And it's like, yeah, but if he plays really well through the last 12 weeks, he'll catch up. So at the moment, it's been definitely a focus on like the Band of Misfits and the Amigos and stuff. And they're the ones getting the points, but there's time.
Yeah, exactly. I think it's like, we we can't appropriate points, just like in general discussion. You know, we try to include as many people as possible, but if you're not, your game isn't being shown, it's going to be tough to sort of come up with some fan fiction to spin a lie, if you will, a complicated narrative as to what they're doing on the season. But to your point, there's a lot of game ahead. I think that, you know, these Laomei people are in a pretty solid position considering they haven't gone to tribal council yet. So here's hoping, you know, Mike came out blazing in the first couple of weeks. I'm hopeful that we get that fire going once again, even if the Flint's missing.
Yeah, I've said it before, I'll say it again. You know, Jeff was my winner pick, and I still feel really good about it. Particularly Jeff, who always seems to get content, despite never being to Tribal Council. I'm like, damn, maybe I've called this. But it's too early to tell, and he hasn't even been to Tribal Council. So I'm going to stop patting myself on the back and get into this episode. So many moves to talk about, as I said. And I kind of want to start with the crux of it all, back to Tribal Council, as we usually start, with the Band of Misfits, which I love, because they so are. I think we kind of called this last week. You know, last week we were talking about how Tanya and Stipe could make the decision to go with Felix and Jacques and have this really fractured tribe that they completely control, or to have a really cohesive group of misfits, basically, who don't have a lot else except for each other. And they chose to go with the cohesive group. And I feel like we saw like both of those decisions kind of play out this week, because yes, they didn't have as much control, but in another world where they're one block quicker and they win immunity and go to whatever is happening next week, that is such a tight four. And I really feel like it could have gone far. So I don't really want to fault them on it, because I think they're one immunity win away, and they did win the reward, so they were more capable of winning challenges. They're one away from this four being, you know, very important in the game, I think.
Yeah, I would agree with that. You know, I was critical of their decision last week, and I do feel like, you know, every decision you make is a balance of your short-term game versus your long-term game. And I think maybe they were thinking more so about the short-term game of creating a cohesive tribe than maybe the long-term game of, oh yeah, let's keep somebody in who we can easily, you know, get rid of. Because I do wonder, I know that's been talked about in the patron group, I do feel like if they had kept Felix and they went to tribal council this time, I feel like Felix is an easy person to go, yeah. Especially if Jacques does reveal that he has the idol again, then they could say like, okay, Sipe and Tanya could sort of be the Jacques and Darrow of the situation of saying, well, we're sticking together and we know that Jacques will vote against Felix. So it's pretty easy peasy. I don't think Tanya's gone in that scenario. So maybe from Tanya's perspective, you know, it was probably a better decision to do that in hindsight. But to your point, I think when it came to tribe cohesion, and that's also, I think, why the decision to get rid of Tanya was ultimately made as well, is because, you know, Sipe in particular is really eyeing this three strong going into some sort of merge type scenario, and it's making a decision on behalf of the group and the individual, which Tanya brought up in her final plea at tribal council. I guess the question is, you know, how much you should be weighting the group versus the individual decision, especially we're still in the pre-merge, but I feel like we're nearing the end of the pre-merge, not necessarily the merge happening next week. I don't think that's the case. We'll definitely get into that later, but you know, in terms of weighing those factors of what's the decision on behalf of the tribe versus me as a player, CPay definitely weighed the former against it. And it remains to be seen as to like, you know, she has a lot of tight allies, very well insulated, but is getting rid of one of her tightest allies at this point. Will it, you know, do well for her later on in the game?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it's short-term versus long-term, which is the same as tribe versus individual, because short-term, they really do need that tribe thing, and then long-term, obviously, it's about your individual game. For Tanya, I completely agree. I think that if they kept Felix around, he's the person who goes here, and she's still in the game. But it's a little bit results-oriented for me, because if they do win the immunity challenge, or they swap here, then Felix is still in the game, and he's teaming back up with Kubus and Dante, and they're coming straight back for her. So I feel like a game without Felix, in general, was better for her. But just in this, like, one particular situation, like, yes, the fact that they happened to lose again and not swap and had to go back to tribal was bad for her. But yeah, in a different world, I mean, they weren't blown out of the water in that immunity challenge, you know, like if it just goes a little bit differently, I do think it's a better situation for her long term. And for Sipe, I mean, I agree with the move for Sipe and Jacques and Darrow. Like, I get it. And I think for Sipe, like, they talked about what everyone brings to the table, right? Darrow brings Rocco probably, and maybe Letitia, so he has some allies there. Jacques, I loved his decision. This is what I'm talking about, dumb defensible moves. It seemed really stupid to tell them about his advantage and his idol, but I kind of loved it.
Oh, because it was a great move.
Yeah.
Great move.
Because if he doesn't tell them that, then he's the same as Tanya, right? Like, he brings no allies from Ta'alo, so like, what have you done for me lately? And he has an advantage, an extra vote. He has an idol, so he's now of use, you know, so that, I love that from him. And for Tanya, I feel like she didn't bring anything, obviously, from having no relationships on Ta'alo, but like, even more than that, she could turn people off. And I think that this is what's kind of being missed. And I think this is what cements C-Pay's decision as a good one for me. It's like, if C-Pay wants to work with, say, Dural, and Dural goes to Rocco, and Rocco's bringing in like a Dante and a Meryl, they might work with Jacques. Like, it's not so fractured that I think that they wouldn't work with Jacques. Whereas, like, I feel like they might outright not. Like, the way Dante felt about Tanya, they might not work with Tanya at all. And that's that connection broken that even Dural could bring in that, you know, is now no longer available. So I feel like Tanya just didn't bring enough and actually might have been a negative for them at a swap or a merge. I think C-Pay is good to go in this, you know, configuration of the tribe forever because she's the most important person who brings all of Saula. They can't get rid of her. If they were to go to another tribal in this configuration, Jacques and Dural would have to turn on each other to try and get with C-Pay and Saula, you know, at the next phase of the game. And I just feel like it made a lot of sense to me from all three of their behalves to be like, okay, we're not in a great spot right now, but how can we try and put ourselves in a better spot for the future?
Yeah, I think that C-Pay did a fantastic service to herself by really pimping out this idea of like, I have people, you know, with me to the point where, you know, she was able to swing that decision at iOS after the reward challenge of like, guys, trust me. I'm going to send two members of my tribe to you know, the Island of Secrets, even though it really benefits her most of all out of any of those four people. But I think as well that she was able to benefit from the fact that she has a really good relationship with her previous tribe, whereas definitely Jacques and Tanya are a bit on thin ice with the former Ta'alos. Dural, I don't think he knows it, but I think he was sort of on the outs of the former Lao Mei's, considering how anti-Rocco the majority of the tribe was. So she really holds a lot of power in terms of all the connections. I know we got asked this on Twitter, but I would put in a bid and say, if there happened to be a merge this next week, which I don't think there will be, but if there was a 15-person merge, she's by far the most well-insulated person, which is an amazing position to be in at this point of the game. She is so well-connected, and I think it was fantastic that she was beating that drum because, to your point, and made her that much safer, where in a four-person tribe, I mean, you can sneeze and that's a reason for someone to target you. There's not a lot of people to hide behind, but her name was the only one that wasn't being said, and she was holding so much power just because of the, you know, assumptive powers that she has behind her backing her up. What I really liked about what Jacques did as well is because, yeah, I agree, you know, we sort of have been lambasting people for revealing private information to be public when it comes to idols and advantages. But the thing about Jacques is, A, I think he's been a bit of an image rehab going on where, you know, he came across as super sketchy when he played that idol on himself and nobody knew about it. And I think he sort of realized how much umbrage people took because of that. So he's thinking, okay, I'm going to need to, you know, come across as more trustworthy, more open. And while it was a little bit random, and the fact that he didn't bring up the idol until a day after C-Pay sort of said like, all right, anybody have anything else they want to reveal, is a little sketchy. But the fact of the matter is, he kept bringing up this war imagery, right? Of like, we're going into a battle. I have stuff in my armory. I think that's a great way to sort of incept this idea in people's heads of, I'm a valuable asset because I bring with me stuff that's going to get us further in the game. And I'm of two minds about the Tanya thing, because I do understand that I think when you get to the merge, especially these modern Survivor merges, Rob Mita has made a great point in a recent podcast about how I think we moved away from the traditional like athletic bro-y person as a merge boot and more so towards who's the easy consensus boot. And I could see a situation where sort of like in Elizabeth and David versus Goliath, I could see a situation where everyone's like, Tanya, great, okay, bye. On the other hand, if you're coming in as like a four strong or a three strong, and you have an idol in your pocket, I could see a situation where you sort of want that to your advantage, where sort of like what Rob was attempting to do this episode, you could draw the votes purposely onto Tanya. You know who in your alliance it's going to, and then maybe use your idol to manipulate things and get out who you want to. That'd be very risky, but I could see a situation where you use Tanya's, you know, supposed weakness to propel yourself further into the game. Though I do think, again, leaning between those two, I'm more so towards the former, that I think, you know, you want to keep people who are going to be able to benefit you in the long term. And I think Tanya could benefit her in the short term, where maybe she'll be, you know, everyone will gun for Tanya before her. But if she's looking to make it further into the game, maybe having those two guys flanking her is probably an easier decision.
Yeah, I mean, the thing that Tanya brings the most of is being a shield. And I think that there's merit there. I just don't think that it's as much as idols and advantages and actual allies. So I feel like if they went in with her, that would be a really good thing that she could bring, but it just didn't measure up to what the others had. But I really felt like the Band of Misfits were playing really well this episode in pretty much every way. We'll definitely talk about CP's decision on Island of Secrets. I thought that was great. I thought, as I've said, I understand the decision. I love what Jacques did. And another thing that I feel is really fun about that is we know that his advantage is a legacy advantage, right? So it's going to be used at the merge anyway, but I feel like he like sneakily hid that. He's like, yeah, you need me and my advantage. It doesn't come without me. So I really like that little thing from him. And in terms of CPay, you know, she is this now really core part of these two alliances. I was talking with DJ LaBelle Klein, like, we need a name for it. I might put out a Twitter poll of like Now May and the Amigos / the Band of Misfits and the Amigos. Like, it's either like Now Migos or Miss Figos. Like, there's something there, but this is a huge alliance that has three idols and an advisor.
Can we call them May Migos?
May Migos. I mean, yeah. Like, yeah, there's a lot. Okay, fine. I'll add that to the Twitter poll, but it's a lot. I mean, it's seven people, three idols, an advantage. And I feel like the other members of Old Saula have not done a great job of making other allies, right? Like, Nathan couldn't be turning more people off. We've now found out that the dynamics, you know, at Ta'alo are that Nicole and Rob are at the bottom to the point where they have to be like drawing votes into themselves and using two idols. So she's been the one to actually reinforce the Amigos. She's the one who's got out more ally, you know, gone and got more allies for them. And she sent them to the Island of Secrets to get advantages. So she's a cornerstone of something very powerful if they do merge, which I agree with you, I don't think they're doing, but we'll talk about that later in the podcast. I want to get to the Island of Secrets and the decision itself, because this for me is one of the most fun parts of the episode based on the decision.
Yep.
And then the lie. Oh my God, the lie. We've been asked on Twitter and on Facebook if we can give better lies than Nicole did. And I was like, yes, literally thousands of them. Like, anything would be better than what Nicole did, I think, for so many reasons that I'll get into. But what did you think here about, firstly, let's go with, you know, CPay's choice and then what actually transpired on Island of Secrets?
It's tough because it was pretty transparent, right? Like, I think there's a secret scene at Saula this week where everyone's pretty much like, oh yeah, CPay sent her former tribe members. But that being said, like you said, because Nathan, Rob, and Nicole are so much on the bottom of their respective tribes, like, it almost doesn't even matter. Yeah. It just perpetuates a point of, yeah, we're not going to work with them. I also find it super interesting, not to get too tangential, that like Rob and Nicole's take on what's going to happen at this merge is, oh yeah, the old Lao Mei and old Ta'alo are going to work together. Because
which
the perception from their
but
the perception from their tribe, though, is that like, you see Dante and Meryl, you know, so buddy-buddy with Rocco and Letitia that they just assume it's going to be the same thing. They have no idea about the anti-Rocco contingency going on, which I feel like is going to be a huge factor that would perhaps not, you know, not allow that big coalition to happen. So I think it's just always interesting how they're perceiving their own intertribal dynamics to represent the macro when it's really much more of the micro. But I mean,
but
this
it should,
is yet
the
another,
thing is that it should be Ta'alo and Lao Mei. And when you spoke about Mike earlier, for me, as someone who really likes Mike and I feel like he's really fun, I don't love for him that his entire edit revolves around Rocco. I feel like he's either going to like take out Rocco and that be the end of his story, or probably more likely it may be his demise. Like, he can't afford to be going for Rocco. He has way bigger fish to fry, and it's the May Migos or the Miss Figos or whatever they're called. You know, like, they're the big war contingent that he should be going against. Like, he needs Rocco and the numbers that he provides. It kind of reminds me of, you know, Lesu going against each other, you know, Rick going against, you know, Rick and David and Kelly and Lauren and Wardog all going against each other when they should have been fighting Karma. And that's how I feel like this is. Like, you, there's a whole other side that you need to deal with before you, like, deal with these internal politics. So that does worry me.
Well, it's also a little bit, to make another comparison, it's almost a little Tandang-esque, where I think one of the issues is that Mike has been holding this loaded weapon, but hasn't had a chance to fire it at anybody. I think he's gotten very, very squirrely the past few episodes, where he hasn't had the ability to go to tribal council and vote anybody out. So I do wonder if and when they get there. It's sort of like when Chris Noble went to his first tribal council, and, you know, everyone was just sort of ready to get rid of him. I wonder if he's going to be so adamant to take out the target of Rocco that maybe he does draw that consensus vote target onto himself.
And then he has no one,
because he is
though,
that short-sighted.
Because then all of, you know, like, then Rocco had allies that won't be with him, and then he basically just has Jeff and Marva and maybe Corbus. Because it doesn't feel like Nathan and Steffi are with him, so where are his other connections?
I don't know. I'm personally seeing, I don't know what's going to happen in the next few weeks, but I could see a situation where, for some strange odd reason, the Saula contingency becomes the swing votes in this situation, which is insane considering that look back on the first 2 weeks where not only were they losing challenges, but they were making chaotic vote decisions in the middle of tribal council. To have them be the most cohesive unit in the latter portion of this game is just bananas to me in true Survivor South Africa fashion. So yeah, I would say that while CPA's decision was transparent, I don't think it was making any of their positions any much worse. And I just love the fact that, again, say what you want to about how Sola is really out in the open with the decisions they make, but the fact of the matter is they've been in control of these iOS decisions, which is pretty crazy and just shows how, you know, easily swayed some of these people are when it comes to just say something in the moment. Rob did a great job with that back in episode 4. Maybe we learn with these Saula people that the more time they have to come up with a lie and come up with a decision to make, the less useful it is.
Yeah, okay. Well, I want to talk about Island of Secrets itself, which is, so they go there and they have these two halves of an idol, which are an idol. That's what two halves make a whole idol. So I don't love this. I don't love when people are given idols. I don't love that 4 idols are now in the game. We spoke about it last season for the very, very brief amount of time that PK had the 4th idol, and then they were all played, so it was fine. For that half an episode, it was a worry. But now there are 4 idols in the game, which means that the game is broken. Even though it's unlikely that it will happen, it does mean that we're relying on the contestants not to break the game. They have to play these idols before the final 5, or 4 people will be immune, and 1 person will, you know, could have immunity. So that's all the people immune. So the game is broken. Like, they can't be doing that. So there are too many idols.
One of them is Jacques. So who's to say he won't play it immediately at the next tribal council?
But then he will immediately find another one. So this is where, you know, you can't have more than 3 idols in the game. Just from a very simple math perspective, this is the most math that I can do. So I don't love that. Like, I understand what they were going for in some way. I mean, at least give them 2 clues, like 2 halves of an idol right there. Like, how easy was that? But I think that they maybe thought, well, what if it's 2 randoms or 2 enemies? Like, I get that that could be interesting, but because it was 1 person and 1 tribe sending 2 people, I do feel like it was likely it would be 2 people with a connection. So that kind of took the intrigue out of it. A lot of Age of Extinction comparisons, like the same as like, oh, who will Rick Devins gave it to? It's like, well, he just gave it to David. So it's just, you know, a duo having an idol. That's my concern with it.
I agree with that. On all counts, I do think that it's crazy having 4 idols and an extra vote at the merge in the game is veering into advantage Genin territory. I'm hopeful that with this group of players, they're going to expend the idols before it gets to that point. Nobody is on a tie-like conservative level while they're just sit on idols.
Yeah, I agree, but it shouldn't be up to the contestants. Like, that's, it's up to production to not put 4 idols in the game. Because we can't.
And I totally think that the reason why they put this half idols in the game is because, to your point, they really hope that 2 random people would get sent. That was what was so appealing about the Exile Alliance and Survivor Token Chains, which, you know, never came to fruition, but still a fun storyline, was, hey, these people have forged an alliance just by the fact that they are sort of there at the same time. What is that going to mean in terms of alliance connections when the tribes finally merge? But I think that, you know, I thought initially the worst outcome was that 2 people from the same alliance were going to be sent, because it's just going to be a boring thing of, oh yeah, we're totally going to work together here, Nicole, take this other half of the idol. But considering what fell out from it, and the fact that because they were together, they concocted this crazy narrative, it almost made up for the fact that, you know, while this might have been boring on paper, the fallout was extremely entertaining, maybe even more entertaining than if 2 random people got sent there.
Yeah. OK, the lie was my favorite part of the episode. A small other thing that I thought was hilarious about this was Kubus calling Nathan Mr. Sad Face, and then it like cutting to him on Island of Secrets, just like crying in this like really emotional conversation with Nicole. Yeah. But, you know, this
talk about I'm so intrigued by Nathan's edit, because it really seemed like this episode was like, oh, he's checked out of the game. Was he not the person who last episode was coming up with this convoluted plan to throw the challenge to, you know, force
to get unanimously voted out, which I definitely think would have happened. Like, we said it last week, and I now feel like completely validated.
So what happened? Was it that his plan didn't go through? Was it the elements were finally hitting him? Was it the fact that, you know, now it's officially like 2 weeks into the game? And he said, I think, to Nicole, that like leaving home was one of the hardest thing he had to do. But yeah, another hate boner edit coming from Kubus as well. That all he was doing this episode was complaining about Nathan, which I guess was sort of a result of the mile wide stare he gave him during the challenge last week. But yeah, we have Mr. Sad Face and we have Mr. I don't know, whiny butt Kubus, who just was complaining the entire time. Like, even when Nathan came back, he's like, oh, Nathan coming up with this stupid story. So I'm intrigued to see if anything comes of that as well with two guys against each other.
Yeah, I mean, now this is becoming like another rivalry, like the, you know, the Rocco Mike rivalry is happening as well. Like there's a lot of like tension in some of these tribes that haven't gone to tribal council for, you know, episodes, because now may actually have been a bit of a disaster tribe, so they haven't been able to like get others' frustration. So I'm interested to see what happens next week. But in terms of Island of Secrets, what I really love about Island of Secrets and also the outpost from Survivor New Zealand is that, you know, something happens every time. And we don't know what it is, but there's that expectation of like, okay, well, what happened? You know, what happens when you come back to camp? Like, Ghost Island ruined that by giving the out of no game for you, which anyone could have said. So I love this, and I want to talk about the lie and why I disliked it so much. And then I want to give better lies, because so it was so convoluted. And I mostly didn't like it from Nicole's perspective, because, okay, so it was dramatic. It was convoluted. There were things going on. There were discrepancies in the story, small discrepancies, two large discrepancies that I want to talk about as well. I mean, it's hard to do a lie on two different islands that you both have to completely sell. And then what Nicole gets out of it is that they don't know she has a whole idol, but they know she has half an idol and the clue to a second half. I'm like, oh, so they know she has 90% of an idol. Like, she got nothing out of it, basically. Like, they basically know all the information and they don't trust her. Like, I feel like what they were trying to do on both their behalves were be really honest for a lot of it so that they trust you, but then withhold key bits of information. But I feel like the lies made them seem too shady for reasons, you know, like it was so convoluted and they didn't believe them. And then the truth was too revealing. So now they know, like, so much of what is real. And I have massive problems with this.
I actually like this for Nathan a lot more than Nicole.
Yeah.
And I will say off the bat, first off, kudos to them for actually getting their story straight. I was very worried when it cut back to Nathan that, much like the Paul Idol lie at the swap, that Nathan would just come up with a completely different story. But it seems like they were both on the same page about this.
But
fake,
not really. Well, because there's subtle discrepancies that are, like, for example, so Nicole says it was a choice for both of them, like, they both had the choice. Nathan seems, I watched this a few times, again, and my apologies to American Rob, but Nathan says that, you know, they got each got one, so one had to have the call to home and one had to get the advantage. So these are small things where, like, it seems small to us, but when you're retelling the story, like, forgive the pun, but there's broken telephone here. Some other key discrepancies was
Nicole. But correct me if I'm wrong, and you watch this more often than I did. Didn't Nicole say that Nathan took the phone call, so she was left with the clue? So isn't that corroborating information?
Well, I think she made it sound more like they both could have had either. This to me was the most vague thing, the thing I think they'll least be caught out on, but that's what I was getting from her.
Interesting, because I had taken it like she had said, okay, we both have a choice here. It's almost like, again, going back to Exile, Dune, and Survivor token machines, where there were two urns, and essentially, like, Nathan took one, and so Nicole was left with the other decision. But I agree that maybe the details were wrong, and in Survivor, all you can do is sit and think about details. But I'm going to give them credit for at least being, in general, you know, having the same concept. I think what I enjoyed about Nathan's take on this as well is that he really tried to blanket it in distractions by giving out intel about the other tribe, which it didn't seem like we saw whatsoever from Nicole. And maybe Nathan did give away some information to Nicole that she didn't reveal, but I feel like, despite, you know, whiny butt Kubis disagreeing, it feels like the rest of the tribe was really into all the gossip that Nathan brought and all this information about what the other tribe was like. So the fact that while the lie that he came up with may have been a bit shady, not as shady as Nicole because there were less details about it, but shady nonetheless, he was still able to provide them some sweets, as it were, a whole jar of you know, Island of Secrets sweets by talking about, oh, this is what's going on the other tribe. We're not going to tribal council, but we at least know what's going on with the dynamic of things. I think that was a really good decision on his part. And look, he was at the bottom. I don't know if this has, carried his position up that much the ladder, but it does seem like there were some people, like Jeff did say, there are some holes in his story, but I appreciate the stuff that he brought. So I think that starting the episode in a really bad position, he has endeared himself to some of the tribe. He has really endeared himself to Steffi with the stuff that he brought and this new attitude. So I think that Nathan definitely bettered his position a lot more in the tribe than Nicole did.
Right. Okay. I did like that stuff from Nathan. And I loved how he was so blasé about it. Like, Nicole's crying and Nathan's like, let me give you all this information to kind of like hide the important stuff. And then like very blasé about like, yeah, so I got to talk to my sick dad, like, you know, like whatever. But
he can't cry though, Shannon. Everyone thinks he's a crybaby anyway. That would just be perpetuating the stereotype.
I know. I just love the like complete mismatch in emotions from the two of them. Like, then the way that it cut between it was really funny to me. But look, I think the discrepancies are important. So, okay, maybe Nicole maybe she, it was more like one urn each and I just misinterpreted it. That I think that's the vaguest of the discrepancies. But here's two issues that I had with it. Nicole specifically said it was a call to home. She was like, I know my family was waiting and that's what made it so hard. Nathan said he got a message from home, and like that seems small, but it's like when you're telling a story, it's like what actually happened in actuality of this, you know, supposedly genuine story. But the biggest discrepancy, and here's what it is that Nicole goes back and gives them the clue and the idol. And then Nathan says to them that he borrowed the clue from Nicole and shows it to them. So it just takes one conversation between Kubus and Dante, or Kubus and Meryl, of, oh yeah, well, we saw, you know, Nathan's clue that Nicole gave to him. It's like, oh no, we saw Nicole's clue. Oh, there were two clues. And one of them said, this is idol half one and this is idol half two. So if it's going to be a lie that's incredibly short term until a swapper emerged, they could have done a hell of a lot better than they did. I think both having the clue makes it, you know, it can be added immediately. So I think that was, I know they wanted to bring back evidence. That seems like what they wanted to do. But I feel like that was a huge problem. And for Nathan, I did like it. But it's easier for Nathan to lie because he doesn't actually have anything threatening now. Like, he gave her the idol, which is another decision that we'll talk about. She has to come back and she actually does have this now threatening advantage. And he can basically be like, yeah, Nicole's got some stuff on the other tribe, but I'm clean, which is actually true. But I do like that he covered it in information from the other tribes. For Nicole, yeah, I think that it was just too shady, and I don't understand why it had to be so convoluted if you're going to tell them that you basically have an idol anyway. Do you want to talk about other things they could have done instead? Because I have so many ideas, and I feel like the segment should be like, name that lie, because I have so many. This is why I do this.
Before we get into that, I just have a general question. Because Rob brought up a good point that, you know, no matter what you say about Nicole's story, which definitely has a lot of holes in it, they basically demanded something coming back from iOS. And so she had to bring something. I guess my question is, have we ever seen an instance this season so far where somebody has come back from Island of Secrets and people haven't questioned what they said? I guess maybe Rob coming back and being so upfront with the decision that he made and not having a vote. But I feel like we're sort of, I really enjoy the variance and the variety that we get from Island of Secrets. It does feel like we're sort of getting the same confessionals from the other tribe members every time, where if I came back and I'm like, this is the decision that I had to make. Here's a transcript of my phone call home. Here's the video evidence of it. You know, here's the phone that I used. It still would cut to someone being like, I think his story has some bad parts to it. I don't know if he's entirely telling the truth, which is natural in the game of Survivor. But I do wonder how many times when people come back from Island of Secrets, are we going to keep getting people doubting things? Because, well, I do agree that it has caused a lot of doubt with the people on these respective tribes. When has it not caused doubt so far?
It's not an easy thing. You know, it was the same thing with the outpost in New Zealand. Like, it's so hard to come back and have that expectation. I'm not saying that it's an easy thing, but if you're going to have a difficult lie, at least don't tell them that you have 90% of an idol. Like, that's my problem with it. Like, either lie or don't lie. Don't give them almost all the information and have a really shady lie. And like, yes, they are both on the bottom of the tribe. So people are going to be suspicious, and it's also Survivor. People are definitely going to be suspicious. I still do think almost anything would have been better. The one thing that I really did like about it was, I think that either the call or the message from home, I think the message from home on the video was a smart lie, because this is something that like people would reasonably take even over an advantage. And it's not like a letter that you could bring back to them. So I kind of love that. All right. Can we name that lie now? Better lie.
Sure. I don't, I mean, are we naming the lie, or are we just like saying it was the lie better than whatever Nicole came up with?
I'm going to throw you out some pitches and you can tell me, you know, out of 10, what do you think this is, better than their lie or not? All right. That okay? Well, okay, well, the first thing is, so, as you know, Island of Secrets is diverse and can be very low stakes. I mean, like, low stakes like sweets, you know, not Sears, but actual sweets that Jeff got last week. So make it low stakes. Like, this, getting an actual idol was the highest stakes that we've seen, and they kept it at that really high level. Like, definitely, I think, bring it down. So the ideas that I have kind of come from, like, their ideas and how they talked about it all night and kind of maybe modifying their lie. And then also just like common sense and like the outpost, and also using what they've known, what they've learned from the Island of Secrets, because they've all been there. You know, they were there for Jeff. They were there for Paul. They were there for Rob. So they have some understanding of what Island of Secrets is. Okay. So my first one,
but they weren't there for Jeff.
Oh, but Nathan heard like Jeff's lie. So like just based on
true.
That. Oh,
that's true. Nathan didn't know about the suite. So yeah, you're right about that. There was some information there.
All right. So if you want to keep it short term, which I do think they did because they both brought a clue that only one of them was meant to have, I think the obvious one is to say you competed for a tribe prize and lost. So I'm starting off small, I feel like. Yeah.
Yeah. So what would the challenge be?
They have a whole day to talk about it. Making a fire. They had to make a fire and they lost.
Okay, that makes sense because Nicole has been close to Rob. I'm assuming that she's gained some fire making skills through osmosis. Maybe she was the one who took the flint from Ta'alo and was able to win just through cheating. So that could be definitely an option. Nathan's just so sad that maybe he cried on any fire he started and put it out automatically.
Yeah. Okay, but also this is something from the outpost, which also people did doubt at the time. So it's tough, but you could also say you competed for a personal prize like a steer's meal and either won or lost because you can't bring
or a mattress.
Back. Yeah, or a mattress, you know, the lies are hard. People have done worse lies. This actually might be the worst lie. This might be worse than the mattresses. I don't know.
Yeah, because considering that if we're going results oriented, that person did nearly win Survivor New Zealand.
I know, but if she'd come back and been like, we competed for mattresses and I have 90% of an idol, it would be worse. This is a big call for me to say this is worse, by the way.
Here's a pillow from the mattress that I slept on.
Yeah. All right. Well, okay. So another one that I have. You can say you lost your vote in a game, like Rob did, so that's authentic information, but since you aren't going to tribal, it's no longer valid.
Mm. Oh, yeah, I guess that is true, because it was after the immunity challenge. So that could be interesting that they did have a bit of information to play with, where they didn't need to be that forthcoming since they weren't immediately going to a tribal council.
Yeah.
I feel like maybe if Ta'alo had lost, which they nearly did, if Tanya had just been a quick bit faster and didn't fall off that balance beam, maybe Nicole just could have been all brazen, like, yep, I have two halves of an idol, I'm not going home. And maybe her and Rob could pull not the amigos, but a three amigos type of thing and basically say, like, yep, you can't vote for either one of us tonight. But that I do think that we didn't speak about this before, but I think the fact that they weren't going to tribal council definitely could have affected the narrative as well.
Yeah, I feel like that's a good backup plan in case you don't go to tribal. I mean, so it's a pretty good bet on like Ta'alo's behalf that they won't go because they've been so dominant. Probably on both of their behalves with how much of like a complete train wreck that Lao Mei was. So that's a backup plan. You can say that you won the chance to send someone to the Island of Secrets. Like that's what, you know, Rob was actually competing for. That's something where you're offering them information about something that you could do that production obviously would authentically put in the game because they already tried to. And it's way better than saying that you have most of an idol. So I feel like tell them you have that.
Yeah, that could be nice as well. You don't have documentation behind it, but I don't know, maybe if Rob held on to his no vote thing, he could have just utilized that again and say, oh yeah, they had to have us play the same game again, and damn it, this is a cursed game, so just beware, it's like a carnival game, it's fixed against you.
Yeah, well, he had to play the no vote, but he's the only one who knows when you lose your vote you have a no vote, and he would never out them, so that's why I feel like they could always say that they wagered and lost. Like I feel like that's always a good bet. They could say that they chose the message, like they could do the exact same lie and say they could choose a message or an advantage or something for the tribe and just say you chose the message instead of the idol. Like, I feel like I've heard this a lot and that makes way more sense. Like to say that you had the choice, but then go with the idol is the problem for me.
Yeah. And that's the thing as well, is that the 90% of an idol thing is super interesting, where like Nicole basically saying, here, I already have half of it. It's like just putting I know.
And the clue
on herself is quite large. Yeah, and the clue, but like it's become even bigger because to your point, they're basically saying like, okay, so you have an idol. You basically told us, you basically are gloating in front of us of like, hey, I got half of an idol and here's where the other half is. I'll be right back. I'm going to the bathroom. Oh no, and now I have a complete idol. Like it just doesn't really, it was a half measure, you know, and no, there shouldn't be any half measures when it comes to this. It's weird that she sort of dug into these weird random details like Nathan's father being sick and not the fact that, oh yeah, I have half of an idol and the other half's around here somewhere.
Yeah, and like we've spoken so much about the lie and we haven't even gotten to the point that she did an Aya Danza style poem, which never works. Don't do the poem. And also that, you know, she didn't bring the clue, but she brought the other parchment, which I feel like made it more shady. It's like, well, why did you bring us everything else, but not like this one thing which you're memorizing? Like, that's the Jacob Derwin of it all, where it's like, well, where's the clue if you have, you know, so that also made it seem
shady. Or the Abby Maria, where she like reads the parchment being like, this says that you also have a clue to an idol. Oh, you can't see it. Whoops, it flew into the ocean. But you're just going to have to trust me on this one.
A bird took it. Like, yeah, like we have like there's so many layers to this. I've got more. This one I actually really like because I feel like they wanted to bring evidence. Now, you can't both bring the clue because that ruins that only one of you was meant to have the clue. But if one of you wants to bring the clue back, You can say this was a modification of their lie. You can say that you had separate stations with, you know, the same choice, message versus advantage. And then so say Nathan took the message, Nicole took the advantage, but in reading the advantage, she learned that it was now a useless dead half idol because Nathan hadn't made the same decision to, you know, get the pair.
I like that. A prisoner's dilemma type of thing.
You can either make it where decision. Yeah, you can make it that she was surprised by it. Like, she didn't know that without Nathan, it wouldn't be useful, or that they both were given a prisoner's dilemma and Nathan just chose the message.
And that could be interesting as well if you're trying to paint the amigos as not being terribly close to, you know, maybe refute CPay's decision. You could say, damn that, Nathan. He chose the phone call home instead of the idol. To have the idol, we could have been in a good place right now. Like, you know what? They could pull a Nathan and be like, screw previous alliances. I'm down with Ta'alo. I'm going to vote with you guys no matter what because Nathan screwed me out of an idol.
Yeah, and then it actually becomes relevant that Nathan's dad is sick because it's like, why would he choose that over an advantage? It's like, well, his dad is sick. Like, now it's actually useful information. Speaking of, they could say that they have to choose between the two of them who got a call with their family. I feel like this is something cruel that production might reasonably do. So I feel like that's quite a believable lie.
So basically pick between the two of you who's going to have a phone call home?
Yeah.
I could see that.
Yeah, I mean, they can't bring it back.
Nathan's dad being sick here. I don't know if we're on a slippery slope towards full Johnny Fairplay, but it's such a random thing to come up with.
Is it true? Like, is it just something that they put in there because I don't think so at all. What is happening with Nathan's dad? Like,
I think he's fine. I think he's sitting at home watching, you know,
Jerry Springer, right?
Watching South African Jerry Springer. Like, I think I think they just completely came up with it. The thing about Nicole's lie as well is that it was so superfluous. Like, I feel like she was designing a car and all you need are the basic things, right? You need a muffler, you need an engine, you need, you know, exhaust, you need four wheels. And she's like, and then there was a big pink stuffed animal on the roof and headlights that played La Cucaracha. Like, she was adding all these great, all these crazy details that's going to make you doubt your story even more. I know specificity can be a key when it comes to like telling a story and getting people interested. And her performance, I think, was actually pretty good from the acting part of it. But Dante did a great job of calling her out here of like, she purposely brought in the dramatics so that people doubted her lie even more because they said, why would she get so emotional about it? But all the details she was adding in there just completely, you know, almost worked against the main point she was making.
And also does, you know, make it harder for Nathan to be matching it on another island. Like the detail, like, oh, I just knew my family was waiting, now doesn't match his message. Like, it's these little things, like, that seem little to us, but if it was a true story, there would never be that discrepancy. Just to end my last couple of points, people put a challenge to me, like, can you, these are all the ideas that I have. Because, you know, they had a whole night to think about it. I've had a whole night to think about it. I've got a couple more. I said that they could call home, but had to give up a vote and chose not to. That's something you can't bring back. That's just a decision. And I think something they could
reasonably
do.
What if they had to call home? They had to call home and their family member had to vote instead of them at tribal council.
Yeah, I mean, as I was coming up with all of these lies, I'm like, these are things production should do. Like, some of these are really fun. You should make two people fight over who has to call home. Like, that's cruel. And then the last one was that they were given the option to switch tribes and they chose not to. And we know that Tanya had some tribe switching stuff at Island of Secrets, so it seems fairly logical that that might be something they would give them.
And we saw in the secret scene that I think Jeff was actually implying the same thing. So there is, I mean, sort of historical precedent for it. Again, I keep going back to Survivor token chains for some reason this episode. But that was a decision that they would make it exile. It was never exactly made, but it definitely was a possibility there. But yeah, there are so many different stories that could have come up with that wouldn't have been on as big of a scale that they certainly came up with. They definitely turned the dial all the way up to 10 when really they could have come at it with a 5 and it would have been okay. And now that they have sick dads, they have idol clues like the in the poem. Mix where the clue that, you know, Nicole just happened to memorize and not necessarily bring with her. So like I said before, I don't know if any of their positions were improved outside of now Nicole definitely having an idol, which sort of like what we were talking about last week with Meryl, it's pretty much public information, but it is going to keep them safe for a round at least, which might be everything in Survivor South Africa. But my God, was it so much fun to watch. And this is really where the Island of Secrets is paying dividends, is what you do. It's less so about what exactly you get out there on the island and what you do with the information. And now we've seen the spectrum of Paul being completely upfront with the information, now going to the novella that these two have written about what happened out on the Island of Secrets. That just shows a grand spectrum of what people do with information in this game that is really just a nice microcosm of Survivor at its best. So I have been loving breaking all of this down and all the possible narratives they could weave. Any of them would have been better than what Nicole specifically came up with here.
Yeah. So to conclude, name that lie, literally anything would have been better than telling them you had most of an idol and crying about it. But I want to talk about as well, you know, Nathan making the choice to give Nicole the idol. Like, I do think it made his lie a lot easier and it made him less of a threat because, yeah, you know, he did actually authentically come back with nothing. Like, that's less of a thing to have to hide. But at first I was like, this is really, really stupid. I mean, they already have an idol. Then I was like, well, I mean, they can't split the votes on them. And if they're so much, you know, at the bottom, which Nicole is saying they are, they need two idols. So it's not, like, there is, like, some defense there, but then I'm like, well, but he's so far at the bottom, so he'll just go home. So I still think it was bad, but, like, I guess if he's trying to save Rob and Nicole, like, both of them, where they have to play two idols at a tribal council, you know, you shouldn't be in a position where you need two idols to protect your two-person alliance. Like, that's where this comes down to.
Yeah, I was not a fan of this decision. It was a huge risk. I mean, I think he basically assumed that Sola would win that challenge. Maybe he was sort of predicting that. Yeah, I mean, he already would predicted that they would because they blazed through that challenge. That might be the quickest we've ever seen that, like, tower stacking immunity challenge be done, where they seem like they just did it in one go without, you know, a block falling over even once. But I mean, his quote of like, I'm on the bottom, but Nicole is even more on the bottom, so I'm going to give this idol to them, like, dude, you're even more on the bottom than I think Nicole is. Considering what Dante was doing, I think Rob would have gone before Nicole had to all have gone to tribal council without him having an idol.
They could split the votes,
considering that even Steffi was turning on him at this point, I think his view of his position on the tribe was a lot lower than he initially thought. That being said, it was a risk that seemed to pay off now, because I'm assuming that, you know, now they have something that can be worked between them, but It was a tough decision to make. Again, if we're talking short term versus long term, he gave up a bit of an idol in the short term. That was a bit powerless considering that it didn't have the other half with it. But in the long term, like you said, he did, I guess, endear himself to his tribe in that now they could search through his bag and they wouldn't see an idol half there. So he was telling the truth. And maybe that's going to give him a bit more credence in the tribe, coupled with, you know, his rising attitude towards the game.
Yeah, it gave him the opportunity to be a better liar, so his tribe didn't feel, like, terrible about him like Nicole's did, but only just, like, quite bad about him. But yeah. Still, I mean, there's no way he could have known they won't go to tribal council, and I feel like he definitely would have gone home. So, results are into thinking that they happen to not go to tribal council. Yeah, I feel like we've gone on a lot about this lie. I kind of love that. So there's four idols in the game, and, like, how many people know about all these idols is crazy. Like,
yeah, so let's go through them here. So we have the original Paul idol that's now Rob's idol that all of the amigos know about, but nobody else does.
Well, Nathan didn't he say that one of them have it to his whole New Sunula tribe?
Oh, yes. Yeah. Nathan said that he doesn't know where the idol is, which seems to be a theme just in this Survivor season is I lost something, whether it's a fake idol or a flint or a real idol. Like, there should be, I don't know if secret should be like a lost and found, where it's like, here's the fake idol that Doral lost in the ocean. It's yours now. You can rummage through the box and take what you want. So we know that. So basically, I would say like two tribes, one tribe thinks there's no idol, and two original tribes know that like there is an idol. It just depends on who knows who has it. So we have Jacques' idol, which all of Now May now knows about, and the extra vote that all of Now May now knows about. And so does Ting Ting, even though she's, you know, she's a ghost, which they can't exactly
she's
hear
coming
her
back
at this
on day
point.
35, Mike. She'll use the information then.
Oh, boy. Exactly. Island of Secrets. That might be the biggest secret of it all, is Ting Ting has been hiding in the hut the entire time and nobody's realized it. We have the Meryl idol, which all of Ta'alo knows about.
And now
Sanula knows about that Meryl has an idol, which so now like two-thirds of basically everyone except Now May knows about it.
And I'm sure they'll find out soon.
And now Ta'alo knows that Nicole has one half of an idol, but Rob, Nicole, and Nathan know that she actually has two halves of the idol, though you can pretty much assume she has two halves of the idol anyway. So, I mean, it's so interesting that, I think everyone knows at least two idols are in the game. So it's just going to be a matter of, you know, comparing notes if and when we have another swap or a merge. And when everyone's on the, you know, everyone knows all this information, I guess the question is, do you gun for that person knowing that they have an idol and they know that, you know, they have an idol? Mm-hmm. Are they essentially safe? Are these like super idols where now they're going to be safe until a certain portion of time because you wouldn't want to vote against them? that's going to be a really exciting proposition. I know people are a little pissed about the fact that, you know, all the secretive idol information is so out in the open this season, ironically enough, on a season called Island of Secrets, but I'm really enjoying it because it's something we really haven't seen that much before in the game of Survivor, at least not for some time.
There is some sort of fun irony about Island of Secrets being like the least secretive season ever. Like, I'm trying to think about like another season where it's just like completely against the theme's name. I find that hilarious. I want to talk about the other most important part of Island of Secrets beyond idols, actually more important than idols, I would say. You know, US Survivor is based on idols, and Survivor South Africa Island of Secrets is based on the Flint, which is, you know, the biggest character of the season. I've said on Facebook, I think that the Flint is getting the winner edit. I don't want to talk too much about edit on the podcast, but the Flint is like a huge character.
I don't know, because the winner edit, because the Flint keeps disappearing. So is it like, it's prominent, but like, we don't see a lot of it, literally.
Yeah, but whenever the Flint disappears, everyone's like, where's the Flint? Where's the Flint? Like, no yeah. one.
A lot of SPV on the edge of Flint on Survivor South Africa, Island of Secrets. This is so fun because, well, Dante, flippers on the other foot, Aquaman, Mr. Oh, it'd be so great if we had Flint right now. If someone had Flint and didn't tell us, that'd be the worst breach of trust. Now he is doing what? Hiding the Flint from the rest of his tribe to get Rob on the chopping block.
Well, it's like, I love that it's like water versus fire in him versus Rob. Like, what is the worst enemy to water? And he's Aquaman. It's fire. So he like took it out of contention. I love that.
Yeah, Dante, I'm so intrigued by these moves because, I mean, what he did pay off slightly. At least, you know, Rob was play acting a bit, but he wanted to do it to cripple Rob of like, well, he's Mr. Firestar. What happens when he's missing the Flint? He'll feel useless. And so Rob comes to them hat in hand and says, oh, guys, it's my fault. I lost the Flint again. This is a bad habit for me. So essentially saying, vote me out. I'm going to leave the game next. And I think that, you know, him really being onto Nicole's lies as well is a good call on his part, even though maybe rolling your eyes in the moment is not a great sign, Dante. Maybe keep your poker face up a little bit. But I think the bad part of this is that the stuff that he's doing is grinding so hard on his enemy to the point where had Ta'alo gone to tribal council, unless Meryl plays the idol on him as well, and we see a triple idol situation happen here, Dante would have gone home, which is not good. It, you know, unless you have an idol, don't draw those votes to yourself, dude.
Yeah, I was surprised by how effective this was. When he was like, this is really going to take like Rob's stronghold on the game, I was like, what? Why would it do that? And then to cut to Rob being like, wow, I really feel like I've lost my footing. You're like, what? Like, I mean, impressive on the read, because that seems impossible. I don't know why this is so important to Rob. I mean, the Flint keeps disappearing. Maybe have something more consistent as like your entire basis in the game.
Something more solid than the thing that keeps leaving every other day.
Have something that you have eyes on all the time, like instead of it being something you lose constantly. But so I was impressed by the read. I was impressed that it was effective. I feel like, was it necessary? No, if anything, it was like it was needlessly antagonistic, because now Rob is keyed in that he has to play harder. So now he's like, you've queued him up that like he's not in a stable position in the game, whether he knows why or whatever. Like, now he doesn't feel comfortable. If you're trying to blindside someone, like, you want them to be comfortable, like, just quietly go to tribal, split the vote, and vote out Rob, hopefully. Like, that's what you should do instead of trying to make a powerful player in Rob aware that he's not in a good position, which this did, you know, to Dante's credit, the read was correct. Why would you want to unsettle an opponent? You're trying to do a sneak attack, and this was not sneaky.
Yeah, and I would say that also at the same time, and this is why I have not liked all the Russell Hantz, you know, mind control shenanigans as well. Like, if you're making moves that worsen the entire tribe just to spite one person, that just feels like net negative. Like, the fact that he even talks about later on, like, oh, I feel kind of bad that, you know, poor Rocco is literally digging in the sand just out of desperation to get a Flint to get some poor rice in his body. Like, is it really useful for you to do this if it's really just going to be to the worsening of your tribe? I mean, you suffered without Flint for a week, and now you're like, nah, I could do without it just to watch Rob suffer. Like, he's unfortunately starving the rest of his alliance to maybe better, you know, or worsen Rob's position in the game, which isn't a great idea. But again, it's so weird that his tune has changed so much, but maybe he just dislikes Rob that much, and he survived without fire for so long that he feels like he could do it for another 32 days.
Yeah, I think the fact that it made Rob want to pull the votes onto himself, you know, was the move that Rob then needed to make. Like, to me, that originally did seem kind of stupid. Like, why would you be doing that? But then I'm like, well, now he knows somehow in this like weird fire water dynamic that they have that he's the target. So he's trying to pull it onto him, have them not split a vote, have them not vote for Nicole, because at the time they only had the one idol. And I feel like that's the right move for him in that moment. So Dante has unsettled him to the point where he needs to be thinking ahead, which is not what you want for your opponent.
Yeah, I agree. I think that, I don't know, maybe there's going to be a tree person somewhere that's going to conquer the water. And so we can set up a nice little like three person thing going on. The weird thing about Dante as well is he had a little bit of a shades of Tanya this episode, where not only is he getting on people's nerves, but he had this thing where they were searching around camp and he said, oh, found the flint. Just kidding. It was a rock. Where it was very reminiscent of in episode one, Tanya being like, I found the idol. Just kidding. Like, I think they both maybe need to read the room a bit when it comes to playing jokes when people are desperately searching for things on the island. Maybe humor can be used to diffuse a lot of situations. That's why Tyson Apostle has proved to be such a good player in the seasons that he's done. But maybe you don't want to catch people when they're at their most susceptible and deprived of so many resources.
Yeah, I think we see these unnecessary moves happen. It's just like, it's just boredom and witting breed stupidity, you know, like with Nathan wanting to throw challenges. And it's like, look, it's not like they've never gone to tribal council. The five Laomei members that have not been to tribal council, to their credit, you know, Jeff, Maba, Mike, Rocco and Letitia are being like completely normal, not doing dumb things from what we can see, and just like riding out this wave. I mean, it's an 18 episode season. Go 6 episodes without going to tribal. That's like, that's how you might win the game. But for some of the other people who actually have been to tribal, maybe they got a taste and they just want to go back because it's been a while since they've been there and they're doing stupid things. Yeah, like they're just trying to either go back to tribal or just breed drama, like just do nothing. So much of Survivor is just do nothing that people can't do.
Yeah, well, I think that, you know, I love it though, because I think that Dante, I mean, I had sort of assumed he'd sort of just be this like aloft coffee shop owner surfer bro. But for what it's worth, he's doing things. Are they good things? No, not at all. But you know what? For someone who watches the show for entertainment, I'm glad that he's doing things, because there's also a chance it might bite him in the ass, depending on how things work out next week. Now that he might have the amigos against him as public enemy number one, he might be out to dry pretty quickly.
I almost made that guy my winner pick, Mike. That, you know, until Jason talked me out of it. So, I mean, he has made good alliances. Like he was in with Ta'alo. He's now in the power position with, you know, in his new tribe too. I just feel like this was entertaining. I was really glad to see it from him, but I still feel like, just why? And I also don't have anywhere to put this in the podcast, but I want to say that I love that Letitia calls Rob Robert, and I was like, I hope she's calling everyone by their full name. And then I was like, what is Rocco's full name? Is it Rocket? Like, what is, I don't know.
Rocket? No, I can't go by Rocket. Let me go by Rocco. Other like Rock Jimin, maybe.
Rock Jimin. Yeah, I love rock and roll.
A nice abbreviation. It could be, if his parents were so embarrassed that they named him Rock and Roll, he decided to go by Rocco instead.
Rockethy, there's a lot.
Rockethy. Yeah, I think that I do love as well, I pointed that as well, that Letitia called Rob Robert, because maybe she just needs to get on like an informal basis with him. Like they're very at arm's length. Like I'm assuming when she probably called him Mike Michael and Jeff Jeffrey for the first like 7 days of the game before she really got to know them, didn't get past a handshake at all. So we always consider her like the mother / grandmother of the tribe, but maybe she's more of that like hardened grandmother that you really try to work hard to impress.
Yeah, like a teacher or a principal is what I was thinking, but I just love that. I hope that when she eventually does get to vote, we see all these full names when she's just putting them on the parchment. We can finally find out. If she ever turns on Rocco, we'll finally find out what Rocco's full name is.
That's the biggest secret in the Island of Secrets. If they go there and they're like, here's Rocco's full name, use that to your whim.
Ooh, you know what I want? I want Letitia to be voting for Rocco to win the game, and that's the final vote of the gives him the million rand, and it's like rock and roll. It's like, oh, that was his name? That's an amazing way to find
rock and roll
out.
Van Ruyen.
Yeah. I don't know where to put that in the podcast, but I just felt like I wanted to talk, what is Rocco's full name? We will get to the bottom of this. But before we do get to the bottom of it, probably a while before we do, I want to talk about next week, because there seems to be like an online consensus that this has emerged, and I'm like, 15 people, I can't follow that. I cannot deliver a podcast to you next week trying to work out what 15 people, 4 idols and advantage are going to do all together.
Yeah, I agree. My best guess is incorporating Island of Secrets, it's going to be a swap, whether it's random or whether it's schoolyard pick, two tribes of seven, and the person left out gets sent to iOS for the week. And that means they're safe from tribal council. Maybe that means they won't get an advantage. Maybe that means, I don't know, they'll get three extra votes and come up with a story about how they got five idols or something, especially if it's Nicole. So I think that's probably the easiest thing, because I could imagine there's 15 people left. I think even in a 21 player season, you are not merging that early on. I think it's too chaotic, even, you know, though we love chaos in the game. I think then maybe we do two more episodes, and then maybe episode 9 is when we merge at 13. But yeah, that's my best guess. I think that they're going to be dissuaded by, okay, pack up the camp, that means a merge. But then I think Nico is going to totally stun them by saying like, oh no, I didn't mean that. It means you're just going to take these rewards back to your new camps. I don't know how they're going to divvy it up. Maybe they'll do a reward challenge for like all the marbles, but that's my best guess as to what happens next week.
Yeah, a few weeks ago on the podcast, I specifically requested that they do swap again at 15 and have someone go to Island of Secrets. So I would enjoy that. But I did pause on the note and it was super vague, which made me laugh, because last season when they had the merge, they had the note like, it was like thin pieces of paper. So the internet like closed up on it and reversed it, so we could tell it was a merge when the next time on hadn't actually told us. And production was like, wow, okay, we didn't realize you guys were that hardcore. So I feel like now they've learned their lesson on the way that they do the notes, knowing that we're going to zoom in on everything. Like, it was pretty vague. I mean, if they merge here, I wouldn't hate like a merge for an episode or two into like an unmerge. That's something that has been spoken about. I still feel like 15 would be crazy. And I was talking to DJ LaBelle Klein, and he did point out that it would be a little weird to merge at an uneven number when Jacques has an extra vote that can only be used at the merge. So that makes it easy.
Yeah, there'd be 16 votes at the merge.
Yeah,
Survivor token genes started with 16.
Why are you obsessed with Survivor token? Like, a lot of seasons started with 16. Like, did you just watch Survivor token genes?
No, it's just fresh on the brain for some strange reason. I mean, I could also see maybe from production perspective, they're like, we got to get these five people to vote some way, somehow. So I think that a swap or a merge either way would get their, you know, pop their tribal council cherries just a tad.
I'm glad there's a shake-up. I can't see Lao Mei go to another tribal council. Like, it's getting very sad.
I know, it's so sad. They were all so tight. It was very much like going back to the Lesu example, that first Lesu tribal council, where like they're all like, we're all friends, we hate to get rid of one another. And I, even though they did win a reward challenge, I would feel like with the other two tribes having the advantage of like sitting out half their tribe, it would be an uphill battle. I'm hopeful that if they do a swap, that it turns into a Kagayan situation where the Nao Mei people all move over to one tribe, and they sort of become like the former Brains denizens, where they become the swing vote between a bunch of stuff, because it's been a group that maybe our rooting interests have fallen behind them because we've just seen them so much in the past three episodes. But I really like all three of them, even as doofy as Darao is, and how much he can't, you know, not keep things on his face instead of in his mouth. So I'm hopeful that, you know, when they move over to another tribe, that whether it's one, two, or all three of them, they're going to be able to be in a prime position of power when all these other people who are finally going to tribal council for the first time are going to want to gun for each other.
I mean, there's other issues. There's how powerful Saul is becoming. There's the whole Rocco issue that everyone seems to be dealing with. So I feel like they'll hopefully be okay, because, I mean, the four of them really, and I want to talk about Tanya, because we've barely spoken about, like, what was the breakout character in her boot episodes. We're going to have a bit of a memorial for her, but Tanya, I mean, incredible character. Sipe, I don't even have words. Like, she's my favorite person in the world. And Darao, ironic fave, incredible. And Jacques is, you know, I think we're all behind him. Like, he's a super fan. And I mean, his journey has been incredibly entertaining to watch. Definitely massive highs and massive lows. So that
I love that. Basically, Jacques is playing as sloppily as Darao's eating.
No, I feel like there's more positives in Jacques' game. He's almost winning the chili. Like, that's a pretty mean way to describe his game, as just food on Darao's face.
I think he's certainly making moves that I think, you know, are good and bad. Like, we just talked about how this episode, how you might initially perceive him revealing the idol as bad, but there's good merit to it. And I think that's what I love seeing a player as well. It's more realistic. Whereas maybe some other seasons might sort of whitewash people's edit to say, oh, these are all the good moves they're making with essentially none of the drawback. Here we're getting a super realistic edit as to like, when you're making moves on the island, sometimes they'll pay off and sometimes they won't. So it's, and because I love the Rao's eating habits so much, it's done with nothing but love that I compare these two.
Yeah, I mean, look, we've said it last season as well, like, Survivor South Africa tends to edit the season really genuinely. And the fact that they're showing flaws in someone's game does not rule them out of edit contention from the one person sample size that we have. And that makes it really fun.
Exactly. Like I could still, you know, I think Tanya's ravings about Jock being the winner might be a bit too early, but I think they can still, you know, he's still in the hunt at this moment, even if he has been such a big focus for making some questionable moves.
Yeah, but I want to talk about another person who unfortunately is out of winner contention. The great Tanya, who really be like, what an arc for her. I mean, she started off as like the Coach Debbie. And then this episode, like, I mean, the last few episodes, since she went to the Island of Secrets and said she was going to basically be like performing her game, like she became really normal. And if you watch all of the votes and the secret scenes on the Mnet website, like every single person, Sipe, Jacques, and Durrell said that they loved her as they voted for her. Jacques even said he regretted the things he had said about her in the earlier episodes. And like, I mean, I thought she was really good in this episode. She tried everything. There was very little she could do. The one issue I have with it is that she made Jacques a very public plan when he has an idol.
Yes.
But I think like that looked bad. But again, I think she knew she was gone. Like if her voting confessional, she's like, I hope you win, you know, like, well, I think you can win. So yeah, I think that was the one flaw, but she was out of options. Like it was a very, very tough, very, you know, it's a very claustrophobic try before to try and work something out here.
Yeah. I think that the argument she made outside of Tribal Council, because I would agree that I think hammering your points home to remind Sipe and Durrell of the points you are making was good. But I think if your plan is to blindside the guy with the idol, you shouldn't outline the plan to blindside the guy with the idol in front of the guy with the idol, especially someone who is so flippant to, as Sipe would describe, like make a mistake and freak out and misuse it, which was such a great scene, by the way.
Yeah,
I absolutely love that. Sipe speaking on behalf of the fans. but I think that Tanya made some super salient points here. I think she made this great swerve here where I think, you know, she thought the vote was going to be between her and Durrell, and she said to Sipe, why not Jacques? I think she was trying to do what, you know, our grandpappy of the podcast, Rob Cesternino, did once upon a time, take out the swing vote, where someone who was seemingly in a position of power was someone who could really be taken out very easily. And I think, you know, the mistake was, unfortunately, besides the Jacques in the moment thing, was that she was vocalizing group versus individual. She was really trying to pitch herself to the individual portion of the game. I think everyone else was still focused on the group portion of the game. I do wonder if maybe if she made an argument of like, look how underhanded Jacques is, that he had found another idol without telling us until he was forced to. Maybe that could have been a different type of argument. But I really commend her for not only, you know, making some pretty cogent arguments that Durrell seemed, you know, it seemed like there was a hot second where he was really willing to turn on his closest ally. But at the same time, that arc, to your point, is so crazy. And it was only over 6 episodes. Maybe my theory is that when she went out to the Island of Secrets, she got replaced with a pod person who was like the much more sane, calm version of Tanya.
Stick Tanya.
Yeah. Stick Tanya. That's who it was. Tanya's spirit was trapped inside the stick, and the spirit of the island took over her body. That's what it was. And so now it's like an episode of Are You Afraid of the Dark or Goosebumps. Her spirit is trapped inside of that stick forever. But I think that Tanya 2.0 for the latter half of the season, I mean, she got so many chizzy points from us, whether warranted or not, just because of the stuff she was able to pull off, which is literally night and day. And that's what I want in my Survivor character. It's as much as we love the one-note goofballs, the fact that she was able to transform from a one-note goofball to like an emotional favorite for her close-knit tribe is pretty crazy. And it just speaks towards the game of Survivor, how your opinions on a person can change from bad to good or vice versa over the course of a few days. So I give all the kudos to Tanya for being a fantastic pre-merge character. It's sad to see her go, but part of me also wonders, like, was this the right amount of Tanya? You know, like, what would her arc have been like had she stayed longer? This really feels like a nice package of 6 episodes, and so I don't want to get too greedy here.
Yeah, imagine if Tanya was just in the rest of the season just being totally normal. Like, we wouldn't even remember that she was crazy. This way we got, like, half crazy Tanya, half normal stick Tanya, and I feel like it wasn't an arc as much as it was, like, literally 2 different people, you know, divided by Island of Secrets. Like, the Tanya on Ta'alo was the first Tanya, and then in this tribe, she was totally different. She was, like, the voice of reason. She was making decisions. She, for a while, we saw her kind of being, like, the peacemaker between Felix and Jacques. Like, it's actually crazy how much it changed. And it's actually, the thing that's weird about it is that poor stick Tanya did actually go for former Tanya's issues with Ta'alo. You know, she couldn't bring any positive relationships from her former tribe based on the way that she had acted in the first, you know, 9 or so days. Mm-hmm. And that was her demise here, because nothing that she did on Now May warranted her going home.
Yep. It was all about her resume, which is weird to talk about on day 12 or so, but it's all about, you know, we want to go in with connections. You have literally no connections. Your BFF Ting Ting was the only person, and she's gone. So you are the least valuable to us. And she also understood that, but I really appreciate that with that 1% chance, you know, as much as fans complain to Survivor players of like, you got to fight with everything you've got, even when your back's against the corner. She did exactly that. And I give her all the commendations in the world, even if it didn't pay off for her here or see payoff.
Yeah. Well, on that note, pun intended, we do have a musical tribute to both Tanya and Stick Tanya. So I'm very thankful to DJ LaBelle Klein, who has put his love for Tanya into musical form. And take it away, DJ LaBelle Klein.
Tanya's gone, Nico poured out a flame. Tanya made some great TV by how she was playing the game, oh yeah. And I could watch Tanya make 7 plans. Only 5 to Tanya. You're still a giant to your stands. Whoa, Tanya, your father robbed banks, but you stole hearts by how you played the game. You're a small, fierce lady. I'm glad you tried to get a Jacques Blindside. Tanya, you're bizarre, and you like to get high.
That was a track from Elton Jean Michel.
Ooh, that's good. Yeah, yeah. Okay, so I'm not good at the Casey puns on, you know, off the top of my head, because that seems really obvious. In the one season we've seen of this, she came second. I love it. Well, thank you so much, DJ.
Or you could say that was a track from Eltanya Jean.
Oh, she's in the name of the song. It has to be Eltanya Jean. Eltanya Jean.
Eltanya Jean. There we go. Early contender for the hashtag, or late contender, I should say, considering where we are on this podcast.
Yeah, I mean, like, we haven't even got to the chizzy. And speaking of, let's get to the chizzy. Please take it away, Jacob Sager Weinstein and MC Color.
1, 2, 3.
All right, I still love that so much. Like, I'm going to work out how to make it my text ringtone, and then it will be my text ringtone.
Considering we're a millennial-oriented culture and we get texts so much more than phone calls, that says a lot, that you're willing to get that message, like, 50 times a day.
To be fair, as a millennial, my phone is always on silent. So, like, most of the time, it won't be heard.
So it's more of just, like, a gesture.
Yeah. I also like work from home. Like, it would just be me in my apartment, just like jamming out to the Chizzy theme song, which is something that I do. Anyway, the Chizzy this week. So in an episode of a lot of gray moves, I want to reward the moves that I feel pretty solid about. So I have 6 points this week because we don't have a guest infringing on my points. So for 3 points, I'm going to have to give more points to Sipe. This is now the, like, 7th, 8th, and 9th points I have given her in this season. I love Sipe. I totally get why she took out Tanya. Of course she was a shield for her. Of course we're all sad to see her go, but I really just, I see the logic behind it. I feel like the other two brought more to her game, and I feel like she's just the center of this massive alliance that we are yet to name, and she has some really good things in front of her. I love the way that she's playing. I love the decision that she did for Island of Secrets, even though, yes, she made it quite public. But you know what? You're gearing up for war. People know what's up, and you gave them some ammo for that war. I also think, like, underrated, she sent Nicole and Nathan, that was perfect. You know, obviously don't send Nathan and Rob, that's too obvious. Don't send Steffi and Nicole. She, like, broke up the pairs, sent those two. It was perfect for me. So 3 points to Queen of My Heart, Sipe. 2 points I'm going to give to Jacques. who is another Chizzy leader. Actually, before this episode, they were the two people on top of the Chizzy leaderboard. But I just feel like he's recovered really well since episodes 3 and 4, which were kind of like the low point of the roller coaster. I feel like he actively played this episode to survive and like showed all of his cards to be of value to the group, and otherwise might have been in a similar position to Tanya, as two people who don't have a lot of old allies, who've pissed off to old Lo, who might alienate people. It's like, what do you bring? And he told them what he brings, and he, you know, he earned his spot there to stay. And then for a point, I'm just going to keep it as a whole Naomi band of misfits fun thing that we're doing here. I'm going to give a point to Darrell. I really feel like he deserves a point. He deserves a point for surviving all of these tribal councils, you know, by offering various things that made him worth keeping around. And he survived here, and he was basically not even in contention to go. He could have gone when Rose Lee went. He could have gone when Felix, like, he could have gone at any of these points. I think that he needs a point basically to signify this entire arc that he's had, that he made it through this whole phase of the game. In terms of honorable mentions, you know, yeah, a lot of people made iffy moves that you could talk about, but there was too much negative there. Rob I thought he did the right thing, but Dante, we've talked at length about his move. Nathan, there was some good stuff, but not enough. Tanya, actually, I feel like honorable mention for her. Like, I think she did everything that she can. And yeah, those are my points.
All right, I'll work my way up from the bottom here. So I'll give honorable mentions to Tanya. I agree that I think for someone who had a very, very, like a pinprick of a hole to get through to survive to the next round, she really clawed and tried her best. And so I give her all the credit there. And also, you know, I thought that she was making very good points. It just was not in the right room. Maybe with some other players, that argument would have really caught fire. But the fact that she was actually getting Darrell on her side for a second, I think really says something. I'm giving an honorable mention to Dante as well, just because I was impressed that he was, for lack of a better term, doing something besides fishing and, you know, grabbing an idle clue from Meryl. Even though I do agree, I don't know if drawing votes onto yourself from the opposition is a great idea. No. You know, it makes sense when you have an idol like Rob, but not when you don't have an idol. So the fact that he's, you know, getting people against him is not a fantastic way to look down the line. I'm going to give my 1 point. Can't believe that we're bringing this back. Maybe Bryce started this trend last week, but I'm giving 1 point to Nathan.
What? He has so many points, Mike. Like,
he has one more point. We don't talk about who the top two are. I don't think he's in any danger.
No, he's so close. Soon. Like, he's so close now.
But I think that, you know, I think that we talked about how we picked apart the liar stuff, but I think I'm just looking at, like I did with Jock in the first episode, where did he start the episode versus where did he end the episode? And when he started the episode with Steffi saying, I don't feel good about him, he's my closest ally in the tribe, but even I don't trust him. And we end the episode with her saying, I'm so glad he's back. I know he'll have my back no matter what. And the fact that, yes, Corbis is always going to be somebody who, you know, is never going to be on the Nathan train, but it seems like everyone else has maybe purchased tickets to get on the train at a later date. The fact that he is able to improve his position on the tribe somewhat, take the target maybe off of himself by saying, hey, here's what happened, I don't have an idol for it, while maybe the decision to give over the half of the idol was not great in the moment, it actually paid off well for him, and that, you know, he is not caught lying in any specific way, shape, or form. So I think he's improved his position somewhat here. 2 points, I agree, going to Jacques. I think the fact that he was able to change his characterization a bit by being so open about his advantages makes him a key asset, whereas coming off shady for having advantages previously was definitely a reputation that he had. And the fact that despite having those advantages, he was able to stave off being targeted was a really good idea or a really good play. He was able to play into that war mentality, that group mentality of you need me as a warrior rather than I'm a threat, which could be, you know, very legitimate as well. And yeah, let me throw three more points onto the CPay pile, just because I know that, again, maybe the decision she made was, you know, getting rid of someone who she was close to. If they'd gone to tribal council again, maybe Jacques and Darrell would have taken her out. But that's a lot of ifs. I think that she is just so well insulated in this game. She's the most well-connected person that I think, no matter what the tribe shuffle is next time, I can say with complete conviction that I think CPay is safe no matter what happens. And I don't know if I can say that about nearly anyone else in the game. So 3 points for her. And the fact that she does this without any advantages in her pocket, but she's connected to pretty much, except for Meryl, everybody else with idols and advantages in the game, means that hopefully she's poised to do really well here.
Yeah, I mean, Queen Sipe takes top position outright in the leaderboard. She's now on 17. You know, that feels right. I feel like she's been the best player so far, and I feel really good about that. Then it gets a little iffy. We have Jacques next on 15. Then Tanya was on 10, like, so amazing, but unfortunately she is out of the game. And so third now officially in the game is Nathan on 8. What?
Yeah, but eight compared to 17. You yeah, know, but he's still a stone's throw away.
Yeah, I mean, it's more than anyone else. And then we have Rob on 5. So, look. There's a lot of points still up for grabs. There's 12 episodes left. There's 12 points per episode. So there's 144 points out there that people can get.
There's 15 people left in the game.
Yeah, okay. Whatever the math of this, there are points out there for people to get. People are going to start going to Tribal Council, but I do think that Sipe is the queen who will probably win the Chizzy. So just call it now. Before we get to our next segment, let's hear a word from our sponsors. And we are back. Speaking of Nathan, let's get to the doof of the week. I mean, the points should factor in because, I mean, Nathan is third on the Chizzy leaderboard and Jacques is second. And there's a lot of problems with
You are point shaming right now, Shannon. I'm trying to look at this.
Sometimes points are bad.
You know, objective point of view, doof of the week for me has to go to Nicole. I do admire the acting effort she put forward. I thought it was like legitimately impressive that she was able to, you know, have this breakdown almost on command when telling the story. But we broke down in length all just the holes that she created with her specific story, which was much more detail oriented from what we heard about Nathan, coupled with the fact that she did not have a big distractor in gossip about the other tribe to maybe draw people's eyes away from some of the less cogent arguments that she was making with her story. She does have an idol. But the fact that she might have drawn even more attention to herself specifically for having said idol has not necessarily bettered her position on her tribe. So even though it worked out, you know, on a net positive for Nicole this week, it's still doofy enough for me to give her the moniker.
Yeah, I might disagree with some of your Chizzy designations, but I do agree that Nicole for me is the doof of the week because, yeah. I mean, it was the world's most convoluted lie just to tell people you have 90% of an idol. That for me is the issue. All of that is the issue, but we've talked at length about it. Let's talk about why everyone's here instead, not the strategy. It is the Biostrat Variety Hour, so take it away, Jacob Sager Weinstein and the U.S. Army Blues.
And now, it's the Biostrat Variety Hour with your host, Shannon Gaines! And also Mike Bloom.
That's my call ringtone, so... Got it all covered.
So it's going to be used even less frequently than the text ringtone.
No one calls me. Like, I mean, my mom calls me a lot. So actually, it would be used quite often.
But your phone's on silent.
No, well, I'm going to have to start not putting it on silent. I'm going to have to start living like it's the 90s.
It's a good excuse.
Yeah.
Wow. What a throwback.
It has my name in it as well. It's like, and your name and Biostrat. I mean, it's got it all. Anyway, let's talk about the
Biostrat. I think what you need to do is... Speaking of not a 90s throwback, but a 2000s throwback, make it a ring back tone so that when anybody calls you, they have to hear it.
I'm not going to have anyone in my life anymore, you know? You know what I'm saying? All right.
All you have is Biostrat.
I know, and I do have Biostrat. I'm so glad you brought that up because we need to talk about the most important news of the week, which is that Biostrat followed me back.
Yes, the heavens have opened up. Benediction has arrived, Shannon. I am legitimately so thrilled for you. This has been a deep-seated goal. What you were to Biostrat, Mike is to Rocco, and only one of you has accomplished their goal 6 weeks into Survivor South Africa. Congratulations. Have they thrown shade at you yet?
No, I mean, they're so nice. Like, if anything, I mean, I've been working on this for a year, like a lot longer than Mike has. So to be fair, I feel like we should get Bryce on the podcast just for this like 2-minute segment, just to let him know the news and just like hear his extremely, you know, positive outlook on that. But look, I have to really thank the Foot account, which tweeted to them incessantly asking them to follow me, which worked. Thank you.
Well, 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 look who's loving the Foot account.
I do love the Foot account has great takes. Like, I agree with the Foot account on pretty much everything. And also, so the Foot account continues to tweet at them now, like asking them to give me a shirt. Like, he keeps tweeting at them. They're like, well, we already followed her. He's like, but now send her a shirt. Like, I don't know.
Do if they make shirts?
No, I don't think they do. So he's asking them to manufacture.
They have to go into cafepress.com and make a shirt and send it specifically to you, Shannon.
I'm assuming the Foot's gender. I just keep calling him he. But, like, he keeps asking them to send me a shirt. I like, it's fine. Like, they followed me. That's all I wanted. I mean, I'll take a shirt. You know, keep tweeting at them about the shirt. if they eventually, they're obviously prone to, you know, being bullied into doing stuff. I will take the shirt.
But listen, you achieved your Kickstarter goal. We need stretch goals. And I guess the shirt is a stretch goal here.
No. Okay, so my now I have a new goal beyond the shirt, which is get them to sponsor the podcast. Like, that's my new... I feel like now anything is possible, and I feel like if they sponsor the podcast, it would be the most amazing story in podcasting history. Like, I don't want to be hyperbolic, which you know I can be, but I really do feel like that would be incredible. So, foot account, that's what you should be tweeting them about. So let's work on that.
I mean, it's going to be... It's a lofty goal, because I don't know if Biostrath knows that a podcast exists, but if they do, we'd love to have them on here. Though, we'd have to say they would be sponsoring a podcast where we talk down to their BFFs, the other sponsors, so that might be a bit of a sticking point.
I mean, it's all love, you know, it's done with love, but of course we do talk badly about the social media, which we're going to do again this week. By the way, the Biostrath count from last week was that I said it 49 times and Mike and Bryce combined said it 25 times. So we are reaching like critical mass on the Biostrath.
I mean, the only reason was that it was a sponsor, which a little sad to see, you know, no coffee or donut sponsor. I know Jessica East did ask us about the mysterious green donut that might have had an idle clue in it or something. But if they did, it's in the bottom of Jock's belly right now.
Yeah, that looked disgusting. Like, you could not pay me. I don't care how long you're on the island.
It's green frosting. I don't think of, unless it was like a shamrock shake type of thing. I will also say, totally tangentially, on the note of the immunity challenge, I'm just going to put out a big hot take here. This immunity challenge needs to happen in every Survivor season. I know that we're talking about, you know, how many times are they repeating these challenges, but I think you cannot get a better microcosm of teamwork in the tribal portion of the game while simultaneously, you know, duties falling to the individual player than this, where you all have to hold the ropes, but everyone has to go out one at a time to put the blocks in. I think it's a tense challenge. It's a simple challenge, but I think it's a really fantastic challenge that tests camaraderie. So I would be a fan of putting it in every season.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, the stakes were so high. You were like, please just save the misfits and send one of these other combustible tribes to tribal council. But it wasn't to be. And, you know, the survivor gods have other plans. So let's talk. Okay, I have a quiz for you this week. We're going to go back to Biostrath's tweets. Guess which one is fake. Okay, number one.
Okay.
Is Dante's strategy to get Rob out worth not eating or making the whole tribe suffer? Pertinent question from Biostrath. Okay, another one. Well done, Lao Mei. Is it a coincidence that this is their first win in a long time without Felix?
Yeah, okay.
Shade on Felix. Oh no, not Rob and Nathan again, shaking headgear. So this was when they were both sitting out. I don't know why, like, why are you so anti?
Yeah, it's so interesting that they're like, oh yeah, I wonder why they, you could see, like, why did they sit Nathan out of the immunity challenge? But I think this is before Nathan came back and showed, like, Nathan 2.0. So they probably thought, like, Nathan's too sad. Gotta sit him out of this challenge.
Based on his performance last week, I definitely wouldn't be sitting him out of the challenge. It makes a lot of sense. They don't trust him. They don't trust that he was trying to win that challenge. I mean, it's a good call. And the last of these tweets, by the way, the fake one is from Cape Union Mart. So just keep that in mind. I've started doing that now.
Okay, so if they say, like, things are pretty intense. Speaking of tense, go to Cape Redacted for all your wild camping needs.
No, that would be a way better tweet than what they're putting out. You should work for Cape Union Mart. Okay, the last one is, Lao Mei can perform for donuts, but not immunity? GIF, like, what? Okay, hard to describe that audibly.
All right, so I think the second one is real, because I very faintly remember them shading Felix last week, too. So I feel like that's par for the course. The Dante thing feels like more like a Steers thing, but that's not Steers.
Steers isn't part of this.
I guess the question is, does Cape Union Mart use GIFs or not? I don't know if they're that woke. I think they're firmly asleep in their sleeping bag. So I'm going to say number one is the fake tweet.
No, they are. They're using GIFs. I mean, they're confusing GIFs, but they did number four about Lao Mei performing for donuts and not immunity. So as I've said, they like to shade Jacques, and maybe that Jacques was in Lao Mei. I mean, they really are very focused on Jacques. Also, Biostrath put out a poll asking if the tribe should be worried about Jacques having an idol, and 10 people responded. 8 people said yes. I'm kind of obsessed with, like, just like the small engagement these brands get. Like, they put questions out there and people are like, so subtly responding, like,
more people follow my fake at Rob Survive underscore Survivor account then responded to this BioStress.
How many are we up to?
15. The number of players left in the game.
That's really good. Like, I'm very happy with that. Yeah, like, Mahindra asked, do you think Dante is playing Survivor fairly? And two people were like, nah, I don't. Like, it's just, they just have the two responses, but people weren't enthused by Dante's gameplay.
Wait, only two people responded to that?
Yeah, unfortunate for Mahindra.
Wow, yeah, not a great representation of the Survivor fan base, because I think people could look at that and be like, clearly 100% of the Survivor SA audience did not like what Dante was doing.
That's what studies can do. I mean, people should start responding to this stuff so that things aren't, you know, put out of whack, but I like how Sears continues to try and just put their product placement in there. They tweeted, another week, more drama. Cheers, Tanya. Like our famous spices, you've added flavor to the season of Survivor. The Tanya spice. Aww. Oh, that would be amazing. Can you imagine?
Oh my God. She is like a spice rack where sometimes it's sweet, like cinnamon. Sometimes it's a little spicier, like the pepper flakes.
Yeah, I think they should name a spice after Tanya. I will go to South Africa and try it out eventually if they do that.
Or she could be one of the spice girls. Sorry, Leanne. Tanya's a spice girl.
Please don't set Leanne off anymore. Like, she can't take any more than she already is. Imagine if Nicole becomes a spice girl. Like, I can't even imagine how that would affect Leanne.
Nicole would come back and be like, on the Island of Secrets, I was given the offer for an idol clue or to become a Spice Girl. And I'm sorry, I had to become a Spice Girl. I just had to take that opportunity.
She would be like, I am both a Spice Girl and I have 90% of an idol.
Yeah, Mel B is very sick. I had to take her spot.
Cue the tears. Another question I have about the sponsors is all this Flint drama one massive Steers product placement? Because all the sponsors love to tweet about, like, the fire and the lack of fire as it pertains to Steers.
So we think that there is a Steers spy in the game who is stealing the Flint and hiding it so that people, you know, will spite the Flint and talk more about Sears Flame Grilled is always better.
Yeah, maybe they're just, I do think that maybe all sponsors, like, they're all influencers in there, ambassadors of Sears, just like, how can we get people talking about Sears? I know, we'll talk about fire, we'll lose the Flint. Like, why else would Dante do what he did? It's like only a possible explanation.
I love it. The Dontrian candidate, Dante was hypnotized by Sears before going into the game, and he has been activated now. That's why he's had such a radical transformation, is now he is working vehemently on behalf of Steers.
I don't know. I feel like Dante would do it for, like, I don't know, $5-6. Like, before the game, like, hey, do this thing for us and we'll give you $5. Like, that's what I think happened.
Or maybe Steers pulled a Slughorn from Charlie and the Chocolate Factory and approached a bunch of players to steal the Flint, and Dante was just the first one to do it.
Yeah, I mean, but there's been a lot of Flint drama. Like, it can't be a coincidence. Like, to
talk though, about... Jeff's such a candy fan. I'd assume he'd take the Slughorn deal, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think all of them would do it. They all seem to love Steers. Like, it's a good business deal.
Which is why the Flint's been missing so much. Maybe Paul was the first one to take it, actually.
Exactly. I really feel like we're onto something here. Or we're losing people. It's one of the two things. But just to point it out, like, Steers tweeted so much about the fire. They were like, Dante doing the things there and keeping the flame alive, but pretty sure Rob's not happy. It's like, he's definitely not keeping the flame alive. That's the whole point. Like,
yeah, that's the opposite. He killed the flame.
Yeah. What? Are you even watching the show, Sears? Like, come on. And, like, BioStrat tweeted to Sears, can you help Rob ignite the flame in his heart? Like, no, because he needs the flint. Sears also tweeted, fire is life. Wanting that fire for some flame grilled. Not even flame grilled anything, just flame grilled in general. And, like, also what Sears
was... You can flame grill anything.
Yeah, you can. It's just a concept. And Sears was also mostly, like, quote tweeting things with one word fire-related responses and then the fire emoji. My favorite example was BioStress said, I didn't win Survivor, but I guess I won against myself, and quoted it to Tanya. And then Sears quote tweeted that and said, shots fired, fire emoji. What is that?
And who?
I don't know. I don't feel like they watched the show this week. I feel like they just, like, got the crib notes off Twitter and then tweeted, like...
All right, let's see. This quote is pretty fire. Yeah, I'll write fire next to it.
Yeah, I mean, they're definitely, you know, I guess Team Rob, because he's fire and Dante is water.
Yeah, and apparently he has fire in all parts of his body.
All right, some quick questions that we have that we haven't actually touched on. I love this question. Sean Lachlan asked, should the evolution of the half idol be the 1/3 idol or 1/4 idol? Why stop there? We could have a 1/8 idol.
Ooh, I like this. Like, a little arm of a hidden immunity idol is in your possession and you have to put them all together like Voltron to form the full idol.
Yeah, I mean, look, the thing that's fun about the half idol is that, yeah, having to rely on other people makes it more dicey. So I mean, let's not get too crazy. Why not the one third idol? Let's get more people having to play with each other, and that makes it even harder to wrangle.
I think we should make an idol like a totem pole, and the more sections you add, the more powerful it gets.
Ooh,
so you could do that. Like a one head of an idol, but it negates one vote. If you put two of them together, it negates, I don't know, three votes. If you put three of them together, it's a regular idol, and so on and so forth. So it just depends on how many people buy into it.
That's really fun. I mean, we've had a lot of good ideas on this podcast. People should be listening, and they should be doing them.
Yes.
We're always right. David Wishler asks, is the Flint eligible for Chizzy points? Talked about. How many? We're not Stephen Fishback, so we're not, we have to, you know, be serious. Of those 144 Chizzy points left, should we be giving some to the Flint?
Yeah, I mean, listen, if I gave Chizzy points to concepts or objects, I would have given some to the challenge this week. So I think, unfortunately, the Flint is going to have to stay off of the list, though maybe I'll give it an honorable mention this week for, again, being the forefront of the drama.
And Mira Krish asks, in light of Dante's actions from this week, are we sure Dante didn't make Meryl confess about her idol just because he wasn't the one to get it? Now that we know Dante is playing the game, which is something we found out in episode 6.
I like this petty Dante theory.
Yeah, I mean, look, that move would have been effective in that that's what she did, but also would have made no sense for his game. So based on what we know from now, I mean, I can see it. That tracks.
It's also interesting in that now that we know the dynamics of Ta'ala, which, as Nicole said, is essentially Letitia, Rocco, Meryl, and Dante, and together, makes Meryl's move last week look even better. Because it wasn't exactly that, you know, she was she lost trust in a bunch of people. It's that, she, you know, she was in a position of power, and now the alliance in that tribe has more power in the form of an idol. So I'll reward ghost Chizzy points, ting ting ghost Chizzy points to Meryl last week in hindsight even more for the move that she made, considering she was already, you know, in a dominant position and made herself even more dominant with her alliance with the idol in pocket.
I don't know. I feel like in hindsight, like now we know that the four was with Rocco and Letitia, like go tell them privately. And then in case they didn't see you take it, you know, Rob and Nicole, then you can, you know, then they don't know. But in case they did see it, then they can't blackmail you with your actual allies. Like, I still feel like it was unnecessary for her opponents to know. So I feel good about my Chizzy designation. See, that's the thing, Mike, when you're making great Chizzy designations, you can feel really good about it forever.
Yeah, I mean, I still feel good about it. That's why I wanted to give extra points. I will also ask, though, because I brought this up before, had to all have gone to Tribal Council, what are the chances of A, Rob playing his idol, B, Rob and Nicole playing their idols, C, Rob and Nicole playing their idols, and Meryl playing her idol on Dante?
I don't know if she would have played it on Dante, but I feel like if the two people you're voting for or putting votes on play their idol, you're probably playing it on yourself. Like, you don't want to be the person they happen to vote for. So I feel like three idols got played and Dante maybe still goes home.
That'd be crazy. See, we were talking about like how ridiculous the Shanae Tribal Council was in episode, what, 9 or 10 of Survivor South Africa Philippines. If the same thing happened in episode 6 of Survivor Island of Secrets.
With six that people would in the tribe.
The icing on top of the donut.
The Biostrath icing on top of the donut. Well, that is all the questions that I have. The hashtag, I feel like, has to be Stick Tanya, although I don't hate El Tanya Jean and Rock Chimin.
I kind of want to do it. Yeah, I think Rock Chimin or Rock and Roll. I think El Tanya Jean, just because in honor of DJ LaBelle Klein's effort to craft a fantastic ode to the character that we have lost so soon in our Survivor South Africa tenure here on this season. I think El Tanya Jean's got to be it.
It brings together, you know, two female icons of Survivor South Africa and a beautiful tribute song, which we can end this podcast on so everyone can just be sad about it, but also we move on. You know, like that's how we process it.
Into a big old swap, which should certainly bring some interesting dynamics no matter what. Things have, you know, we've seen things boil on these two tribes while another tribe we've gotten to know their personal dynamics really well. Now we're mixing it up again. I think something's going to break. Something's got to combust here. And I cannot wait to see who gets hit by the shrapnel.
Yes. And when the dynamics get crazy, or should I say chaotic, you bring on a guest who knows how to talk about chaos. So I'm very excited to announce that next week, P. Chaos himself, as we dubbed him last season, will be here to talk with us about all of the crazy dynamics and what his thoughts are about all of it. And PK, as you would all know, I love him so much. Like, I loved watching him. I love talking with him in his deep dive. And I'm just really keen to get him on the podcast next week.
He's going to be great. And especially because now we are also nearing the near end of the pre-merge, I'm assuming, which was when PK was really
lost
starting to make these
yes.
kind of, yeah, he was starting to make these kind of crazy decisions, namely the one to get rid of Tevin, who was his closest ally literally up until that episode. He's also known to he's known to do some shenanigans with an idol or two, so I'm sure he has some thoughts about the public sharing of idols, considering he told nobody about his idol when he ended up playing it. So I'm sure he's going to have a lot of really interesting thoughts about this season. I'm so, so excited to get into everything with PKOS.
Yeah, it's going to be awesome. Well, Mike, what else do you have going on in the podcast world until then?
Amazing Race is about to wrap up. We talked through another sad outcome this week with Rob Cesternino and Jessica Lees. I actually wanted to ask you, Shannon, at the end of this, because I know you watch both shows, but I know Edwin Johnson had drawn a lot of comparisons between Tanya and Becca of Team Fun. Having watched both shows, do you see the comparison there? Does it hold water or fire?
I feel like it really doesn't. I mean, like, he said before that he was talking about... So he said Becca and Tanya, and then this week people were saying Becca and Debbie because Becca said, "I'm pissed," and we've obviously made a lot of Debbie-Becca comparisons, so I'm like, maybe there is something there in this, like, weird triangle. I don't know. I feel like maybe the more normal version of Tanya, and when he started saying it, like, around the first couple of episodes, I was like, this is pretty insulting to Becca, to be honest.
Yeah, so I guess Stick Tanya is comparable to Dark Becca, as I guess it's sort of the lines we're drawing there. But I had a great talk with Ram and Jess there, and I got to talk with Becca and her partner Floyd as well with Team Fun for Parade. Super excited for the jam-packed finale next week. Also, I'm going to start covering Big Brother 21 for Parade, doing Exit Press with them every week, so make sure you are tuned into that as we keep... The first day of summer was officially this past week, Shannon, so I'm officially... grateful to start the summer season with plenty of South Africa to go around.
Well, it is freaking cold in Melbourne, so I hate you guys for that, but there's so much good reality TV going on, namely Survivor South Africa. I've really loved watching The Amazing Race. Like, I haven't, as I said, haven't watched it in absolute years, and I've really enjoyed your recaps and learning about it and asking really stupid questions about it. Like, it's just been such a good time.
I mean, listen, no questions are stupid questions, especially for Amazing Race when there's like 30 seasons of history to dive into. So I really do thank everybody for not only tuning in, but, you know, we'll definitely talk about it next week. If you like the season of The Amazing Race, there are plenty more in the backlog to catch up on and get you through your summer until the next season of Amazing Race airs probably like 3 years from now. So, yeah, so you can always reach out to me about it. As well as reach out to us if you ever need access to watch Survivor South Africa too, because it's just gone so good, Shannon. I can't wait to keep watching these episodes and talking about them with you.
Yeah, I mean, hopefully someone who's got to the end of this podcast is like on board with the fact that Survivor South Africa is really fun. Like, it's just great characters, great strategic decisions. Well, I mean, not in the actual decisions themselves, but in the decisions people are faced with every week. There's just so much to talk about. There's so much strategy. It, like, yes, there are four idols in the game right now, but it still feels like middle school-esque, you know, real, authentic. That's the vibe that I get from it, and I'm really loving it.
I thought you meant that everyone had, like, the mindset of middle schoolers in terms of, like, their brains are not fully developed at this point in terms of making good decisions.
You said it, not me. Survivor South Africa has always kind of reminded me of, like, a late 20s era U.S. Survivor. I think, you know, I've always compared season 6 to Kageyan, I think just because I love both those seasons so much. So I feel like that's where it sits for me. That's not really middle school, but it's an era of Survivor that I really, really love. And I love Survivor South Africa. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm its biggest stan. I really feel like I am, like, its loudest stan, maybe in
Should
the world.
Should we get a shirt of it?
Yeah, I mean, Biostrats, hit me up with the stan shirt. Foot account, ask them for the stan shirt. Follow Mike at amikebluentype. Follow me at Shannon Gates. You can hear what's happening with me in Biostrath all the time. Also, Chizzy Charts, which people, I mean, you need the Chizzy Charts. You need to see the math of what we're doing. And I'm going to put out that poll of what we should call the Miss Figos, the Now Migos, whatever it is. We'll vote on it this week. We'll come up with an alliance name for an alliance that may not even come to fruition. That's the kind of thing we're doing on the Survivor South Africa podcast. And while you're there, subscribe to the Reality TV Wrap-Ups feed, subscribe to the International Survivor Wrap-Ups feed before Australian Survivor starts. That's coming down the path too. There's so much going on this winter / summer. Like, I can't even, you know, the US Survivor is my off season. It really feels like that. But please do subscribe. Please do leave reviews. And once again, Mike, I've had so much fun chatting with you about the episode. And yeah, just a great time all around.
Same though. Cannot wait for next week.
Yeah, PK is going to be so fun, and I'm sure the episode will be great as well. So we will catch you guys then. Thank you so much to Scott Sabia behind the scenes. Thanks to you, Mike, as always. And we will leave you with Altanya Jean singing Tanya. There's a lot of Tanya in that sentence. Take it away, DJ LaBelle Klein.
Tanya is gone, Nico put out a flame. Tanya made some great TV by how she was playing the game, oh yeah. And I could watch Tanya make seven plans. Only five to Tanya. You're still a giant to your stands. Whoa, Tanya, your father robbed banks, but you stole hearts by how you played the game. You're a small, fierce lady. I'm glad you tried to get a Jacques Blindside. Tanya, your bizarre